Welcome to the Chris Ruggiero Podcast with your host, Chris Ruggiero.
Shout out to everyone who's been listening, and welcome to new listeners to my podcast. I am Chris Ruggiero. I talk to people who do cool things and share their stories that I hope you find interesting. This week's guest is the lovely and talented Anya Sapozhnikova. I met Anya last year while performing in Atlantic City in the burlesque show. She is an aerialist, which means she performs while hanging from something, from silk to chains. She's able to make it all look good. She is one of the creators of a performance space in Brooklyn called the House of Yes, which is currently in the process of opening its third version. At the time we recorded this, a few weeks before the posted date, we were both performing in the Curious Show in Atlantic City. The show has since closed unexpectedly. We both talk about how cool the show is and how happy we were to be part of it, so it was a big bummer that it closed. But that's a bit of the thrill of show business. Knowing that things can end suddenly makes me appreciate everything that I've done. You can see her currently in the burlesque show in Atlantic City at Borgata, where I occasionally make guest appearances. We talked for a while, so here's part one with Anya.
My summer is working in Atlantic City to save up some money so I don't have to worry about money for a little while.
That's where we are right now.
We are right, yeah, here at the Taj Mahal.
We're in a hotel.
Yeah, I'm not really going to have a summer this summer.
Because you have something that you're working on right now?
Yeah, so the House of Yes is pretty much my summer. And there's no kind of planning that we can really do around it. It's just kind of like, there's permits we're waiting for. There's permits from a lot of, like, multiple different bureaucratic organizations. Kickstarter coming soon in like 2.5 weeks from today. Today is June 25th.
No.
27th.
Not June.
May.
It's May 27th.
2014.
But they're not going to hear this for a couple days. Great. It's probably June. Yeah, it might be June by now.
So the House of Yes is a multidisciplinary, primarily focused on circus space with a theater, bar, restaurant, and a juice bar. That is going to get open hopefully September, maybe October, in its third incarnation. And it's going to be the best thing ever. It's going to be a place where the bar and the restaurant will make it sustainable so the artists get paid decent wages while the audience do not get raped for ticket prices. And it's going to have everything so you don't ever have to leave. You're going to have a yard and so bar rehearsal space.
How is this an improvement over the other Houses of Yes?
Well, the other Houses of Yes were completely illegal, therefore not
completely
sustainable.
Illegal.
Completely illegal.
Right. Okay.
I don't think that, I mean, the DOB and the SLA don't really, I think, Google obscure webcasts.
No, we're safe.
Our podcast, so we're safe here at the Taj Mahal.
No one really listens to this anyway.
The other ones flew under the radar. You know, they were always community spaces. We weren't, like, just a bunch of people trying to throw raves and throwing in some community programming to make us be okay. It was kind of the other way around, but we've done some things that were okay, and we were able to get away with them because it was Brooklyn in a certain point in time. And now we're in 2014 and things are different, and to run an art space you have to be legal and organized and safe and dot your I's and cross your T's and have all your ducks in a row before you open. So that's where we're at.
So what are some of the hurdles or obstacles or challenges in making this more of a legitimate place?
So we were really, really lucky with the partners that approached us as soon as we announced that we were losing the lease on the previous space. In our, like, extreme, like, heartbreak and despair and not being able to leave our apartments because we were, like, trying too hard to, like, just keep it together. Point in time, Kay is my best friend of, like, 11 or 12 years and business partner on this venture. We were like, okay, let's just manifest who these ideal partners would be. And those people would be somebody who has very extensive experience in opening up a bar and a restaurant in New York City. these guys that approach us have just that, countless bars and restaurants and, you know, like Three Pickles and the Bake Shop in Williamsburg. You know, their family is owns the Mogador in Williamsburg and beyond, and Cafe Orlin, like really popular spot. Really know what they're doing, and they happen to have a construction company that they own. And so when they approached us, we were just like, this is too good to be true. Like, there's no way this is going to go through at all. You know, it was like December, January. I was here in Atlantic City once again on a 5-day run of the burlesque show that you and I were in together.
Yes.
Hotel rooms is usually where I get the most clarity, because in New York, it's you're so overstimulated and you're oversaturated, and just the amount of creativity and just like just stimuli in your brain, you're just like, you can't, like, you're always at your like 200% creativity, but you're also like never completely clear in anything that you do. At least for me, it's all like output. It's like hard to listen in New York. You're just like pushing your agenda and fighting for it. So like being in New York and being in this limbo with the space, and every time you go outside, everyone's like, so like, I see that you're enjoying yourself on this dance floor. Let me pull you away and ask you if you signed your lease yet, and have you found a new space, and like, where are you at? So it was just like a really weird time for me. And so here I am in Atlantic City for 5 days straight, where I literally don't have anywhere to be except for at the show that I know extremely well. It's a piece of cake to do. You know, the food is provided for me, like, the hotel room is taken care of, and it's, like, you have nothing but time and space to really, like, think and, like, listen to your brain and yourself and people you choose to, like, give a call and have a conversation with. And still at that point, I was like, okay, like, Alon and Justin, these guys that wanted to partner up with us, I'm like, it's too good to be true. There's no way. And then one day, like, 3 or 4 days into being on this gig, I wake up and I'm like, oh my God, like, what am I doing? It's almost 2014 and I still have no idea where the space is at. And before that, I was like, you know, even though everyone that I would ever run into anywhere, like, leave just outside of my apartment, be like, what's going on with House ES? And meanwhile, I'm like, I don't know if I want to do this still 100%. You know, I'm really happy it happened, and like, everything that I am is because of that space, but like, maybe like me as a person and this venue are actually like two separate things, and maybe it doesn't need to define me as a human, and maybe I just want to like take basic ballet classes and hit up some contortion classes and like develop as an individual and as a performer, and maybe that's my path. But meanwhile, everyone I ever run into is like, so what's next? Like, when is it happening? And so I really wasn't sure, like, at that point. At that point, you know, it was 6 months after the space closed, and I wasn't sure if, like, it wasn't so urgent to reopen, and I wasn't sure if I needed to reopen anymore. And, like, the scathing, like, sensationalist, like, whiplash of, like, oh my God, like, we lost the lease, and there's this community that just, like, really wants to have it keep going on. And meanwhile, like, the last event we hosted there got raided by the cops, and we were like in every newspaper ever, like New York Post, The Times, and every blog, and everything in between was like covering that the speakeasy finally got raided and shut down. And you know, there was like all that, and now 6 months have passed, and in a hotel room in Atlantic City where no one can drag me out to a meeting, I won't run into anyone who's going to ask me when the lease is signed. And I woke up and I was like, oh my God, I really want to do the House of Yes. And I jumped out of bed and I just like went on Craigslist and started calling up like random warehouse listings.
That was why you were here.
While I was here, yeah.
Over New Year's
weekend. New Year's, Christmas to New Year's weekend. Right. And then I like made all these phone calls and sent all these emails. And then I went downstairs to the scene shop that, you know, like where Sydney works. They have, like, a sewing machine and hot glue guns and...
This is over at... For people who don't know what we're talking about...
Okay, so for people...
This is at Borgata.
So at the Borgata Hotel, there is this place where they... It's not really an arts and crafts studio, but it could be if you wanted it to be. This is where they have gaff tape and all the production people, like... in, you know, there's, like, the riggers are there and the sound guys go there and... The costume, like, wardrobe people are there, and it's just like this this room with everything in it. It's
like the workshop area.
The workshop area, yeah. And it was Alan Valentine's birthday. Alan Valentine is our producer for the Burlesque show and the Curious show that we're in right now, which is why we're here today.
Come see us every Wednesday and Friday at Taj Mahal.
Uh-huh. And so I went down there and I bought two decks of cards and I made, over the next like 5 hours, I made a diorama of our show with the whole cast in it out of playing cards and cardboard and gaff tape to give to our producer as a birthday present because he's a male and has everything.
Yeah.
And he's fucking awesome.
And it was, your little thing was great. I was in it.
You were in it, yeah. You were juggling clubs that I cut out.
Yeah, it was
out
amazing.
Of clubs, yeah.
It was crazy.
You were on a unicycle as the Joker juggling clubs.
Right, yeah. I'll post a photo. I'll try to dig up. There's a photo of it somewhere.
Alan has a photo of it for sure. Yeah.
I'll find a photo of it and post it on my blog. So go to my blog and
so
look
here
at
I
that.
Am, like, you know, I just woke up and I had this reawakening to like wanting to do this thing that I've been doing for 5 years straight with no interruption, no break whatsoever. And then immediately after looking on Craigslist for warehouses, I ran downstairs to the scene shop and then spent 4 or 5 hours assembling this diorama out of playing cards. And they're like installing for Tiesto and everything's going terribly wrong. And so meanwhile, everyone is like coming into the scene shop and like bitching about it. There was like some video projection thing that like wasn't working. That was like the focal point of the show.
Right.
It was either Tiesto or David Guetta. It was like one of the like one of the two biggest DJs in the universe.
Because they're getting ready for EDM. Tiesto and David Guetta back to back.
Yeah, yeah,
like,
and it was
like,
just like
$1 million concert.
Yeah, and everyone would just like be totally freaking out, and then they would come in and they'd be like, "What the fuck are you making? Like, oh, this is really cute. Did you make this? Wow, that's amazing." And then every time a new person would come in, I would just like explain to them like every character in this like diorama, and they'd be like, "Oh, I guess the world isn't coming to an end because this Tiesto, like, the projection isn't working." So it was this funny day. And so after, like, being in this super, like, hyper-creative, like, mood of just making art for art's sakes kind of thing, which as a as an artist who can pay their bills through their art, like, that's a really hard thing to come by, is, like, making art for art's sake. It's a very precious, special thing that doesn't happen a lot. I get a phone call, and it was these partners who, like, we thought we lost the lease in the building and that they were looking at. And they were like, it's happening. The landlord called us back and we're going to sign a lease on the space. And that was the day that my best friend was coming to visit me. And, you know, she's also super fucking busy all the time. And that was the day that she was able to come to Atlantic City and see the show and spend time with me. And, like, we were able to spend time together as humans and not as, like, two overwhelmed people trying to pull off some corporate gig.
Yeah.
And I remember, like, she was like, "Oh, I just got off the bus." And I was like, "Oh, my God, I have two, like, really cool things to share with you." And so I met with her in the front of the hotel, and I was like, "Okay, the first thing is this diorama, and here's the full
that's
like
your,
long
like,
winded.
Your life is this thing right now."
Yeah, and I'm like, "And this is a really long winded explanation of what the hell is going on here. And look, there's like Chris the juggler, and he has clubs, and he's juggling them, and they're hanging by strings. And this is our producer, and he has, and this is the dancer with the cards, with the hearts cut out all around her because they're in love, and he's Alan Valentine on top as the king of hearts because he's Valentine." And Ilan and Justin just called me, and the lease is going through, and our lives are going to completely change for the next 10 years. Like, it's a 10-year lease, and everything we've ever wanted, and they own a construction company, is happening, like, starting now.
I find that I battle that as well, where a lot of creative and entertainer type people, there's sometimes when it happens when you're just like, I don't want to do this anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Like how you said, like, you were wondering if that was it. Like, you know, you did your couple things with House of Yes, and then like, okay, maybe I should just maybe not do this. And then it's like one thing happens that like just turns the, I feel like it happens to me all the time. We're like, I don't want to deal with this.
Yeah.
I see people like my friends that I went to college with or high school with that have like regular jobs and they just go to work, you know,
and
they're
like
buying houses.
Yeah, and they have the discipline to just like stick it out and just have consistency.
What during that transition, like within a few days, like your transition went from like, I don't know what's happening, this is like all up in the air, to then, oh, it's happened. It's in. You know, it seems like that would be a longer process, but it seems like that happened, and it often happens. I can attest to that too. Like, happens with like one phone call.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like that happened kind of to me this summer. I was like, when Alan, who we were just talking about, like called like this at the beginning of the summer, like, I don't have much work. And then Alan called me and he's like, oh, you're coming to Atlantic City all summer until from May through September. I was like, oh, that's crazy. You just changed my life.
Yeah.
You know, for the next 4 months or whatever, like my life is completely different.
Yeah.
So what happens in that moment when you get that moment of it working?
Well, I think that in that moment you kind of remember that like, oh, you can trust the universe. And whatever periods of uncertainty and meaninglessness that you went through, like you went through them for a reason. And it kind of, I think like some people would say like it renews their like faith in God, or they like realize that everything happens for a reason, like cliched kind of statement that you hear a lot. And that it's like,
yeah, whatever you call that. I mean, this, I feel like,
I mean, to me,
it
always, happens when I'm completely like in tune with the universe. And it was almost like, I woke up and I had this realization, and then I immediately snapped into this like super creative mode. And like the art for art's sake mode is like when like you're not creating for a client, and I think that you're like really open to the rest of the world when you're just like creating and you're like making something to give to people. And like your soul is kind of open. You're not just like, oh, I'm doing this for this purpose and it has to have these parameters. And so, you know, from that experience, because it was just the timing was so powerful, where like that was the day that I woke up and I was like, holy shit, we got to do something about this. And like I knew what I wanted. And then right away, I was just like compelled to just be like really creative in that like creative, like, oh, I have to be creative now. Like, let me do my best. But I was just like unbridled creativity was now going to happen for 5 hours. And as I'm doing this, like, you know, I'm working on like Alan's diorama, was like a lot of like mindless, like, let me cut out all these hearts and let me cut out this thing. And so there was a lot of like thinking that I could do. And I think when you're really like thinking and you're not thinking for like a purpose or like, let me sell this thing, you're not like being a commercial artist, but you're being a true artist. I think that's when your thoughts are really heard to whoever is listening, you know? And like, I don't really believe in like God as like a singular, like thing, but I really believe in like the universe being this like alive interconnected thing that we're all attached to. But how much do we want to listen to it and like talk to it is kind of up to us. And that was like one of those days where I was like very clear in what I wanted to do, and I was able to put myself in this situation where my thoughts and like my prayers were kind of open.
Yeah, I kind of like that fits in. It's kind of like the cheesy like quote that you see around that's like, find what you do, how you spend your time when you're procrastinating your work.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's what your work should be.
Yeah.
And we all have that thing when we're supposed to be doing something, but then we're doing something else. And that's like what, you know, what you should be kind of doing. A lot of this work and this creative things that are coming through us as people is not really us creating it. It's like it's being sent to us, and we're like, if we're open to
it. Well, I think that we're all kind of creating it.
So we are all the universe.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that the more you let yourself be a part of it, like I really am starting to feel that technology is like really evil, and it really shuts down that connection. And like some people who are just like on Facebook or playing video games, or like I have a friend of a friend who's like getting really heavily into trading Bitcoin, and he's just going down this like falling down this rabbit hole of like working like 24 hours a day because China is like a huge part of that market, and so he has to wake up at 4 in the morning, and it's like, and he's making tons of money doing this. It's crazy. And but I'm like, well, but you're losing that humanity and you're losing that connection to like the greater, like that one thing that connects all of us. And so different people can take different like roles and different, you know, they can kind of commit to like how much do they want to impact that greater, like how much responsibility are you going to have over that. And like I don't know how like off the record some of these conversations can be, or like how incriminating they might be. So like like every 6 months to a year, I usually participate in an ayahuasca ceremony, and there's like a shaman that comes in from somewhere in South America and conducts these ceremonies, and it's usually like very controlled.
You do this in New York.
I do this in New York.
So
yeah,
they come here.
They come, yeah, with the medicine, and it's a very like specific way of getting involved in that. And then you come and you sit in a ceremony. And there's a lot of different shamans, and they do things in very different ways. And some of them are more modern, some of them are really traditional, where like they only speak Spanish and somebody translates. And like one of the, there's like a lot of lessons you take away from it. But one of them is that like you can choose how much responsibility you like take. And some people, and, you know, like the first ceremony might be like, oh wow, like my actions really cause this ripple effect. I really have to be super aware of like what I say and how I treat people and how I take care of those around me. And then eventually it's like, wow, like I have to actually be responsible for my parents as well. And like my parents are a little bit backwards in these ways, and I can't just be like, oh, live and let live and be okay with how they are. I have to take responsibility for it. And then eventually it's like, I have to take responsibility for my ancestors. And then eventually it's like, oh, I have to take responsibility for the ancestors that are really far removed, that they, I don't even know their names. And then it's like, I have to take responsibility for all of humanity. And then it's like, oh, I have to take responsibility for all of the beings that ever existed in the universe. And, you know, and it's like, it's just like indefinite to how much responsibility you can take.
How do you connect these two parts of your life? So there's like your personal life, and then you have a performing life of, you know, doing performances, but then also you have this business side of,
well, I think that it comes
venue.
Down I think that it comes down to like doing everything with integrity. You know, a lot of the times that I do like bar mitzvahs and mall grand openings in Connecticut and club night, it's very important for me to keep track of the fact that I am making money to fund something that is real and very important to me. Like even, you know, being in Atlantic City right now, like we're really blessed to have a producer who's like a really cool person and really gets it, so that we happen to like all get along, and we've, you know, made like close friends. Like I consider you a friend and not just like somebody I work with, you
yeah.
know, but like we're lucky in that. But I'm here in Atlantic City to make money, so I can take that money and do something really important with it.
How much of your work that you do is to, like, passion projects or whatever people call it, where they say it, like, you're doing one thing to fund what you really want to do?
Well,
so, like, how much of being here, so, like, I mean, I'm in Atlantic City performing as well in the same show, and I feel like I'm not utilizing this to make money. So I feel like this is kind of an opposite. Like you say you're here to make money so that you can do what you want to do, like back in Brooklyn for
right.
House of Yes. Where me, I think it's a little bit different. Like I can make a lot more money on the road.
Oh.
Doing other things.
Uh-huh.
Where like I'm here because I love the, when I'm on the road, I'm by myself.
Uh-huh.
So when I come here, it's like you said, I have friends in the show, and it's like a lot of my friends are from Atlantic City now, from being here
right,
for, you know,
right.
2 years. So that's like a kind of an interesting thing that
yeah,
is completely,
I never thought about it that way.
Completely opposite. What work do you do that, I don't want to say that you don't love doing, because I feel like even if it's like something that you're doing it for the money, you still enjoy
no,
it.
You know, I've kind of quit doing things I hate doing. And I'm really lucky to be able to do that. Like, there's certain stilt walking, you know, it's like I guess I'm supposed to be professional, but there's certain clubs I just won't work at because I just don't enjoy it. And it carries zero anything to it. And it's not worth the money that they pay me. But the reason I love being in Atlantic City is because I'm literally, like, my act on Wednesdays is 3.5 minutes long. And my act on Thursdays is about 4 minutes long. And my act on Friday is about 3.5 minutes long. So that's... And then, you know, I also have to, like, put my makeup on beforehand. But the rest of the time, this week, I'm working on the Kickstarter campaign, which we're trying to raise about $100,000 and then, you know, in 3 weeks for the House of Yes, which is my passion. And that's why I'm here, because I get to... Because if I wasn't here, I'd be hustling really hard and producing some crazy gig and making a million costumes and booking people and meeting with clients and going on rigging walkthroughs and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But here it's like we're on a track. We're like doing this thing that works. We have an amazing producer who takes care of things. And so I get to work on the things that matter.
Yeah, I always see you, so backstage or before shows, after shows, you're always kind of on your computer working. Are you able to disconnect from that world?
I think I am. I mean, I think that I don't have a problem connecting with people. Like,
yeah,
you know, right now we just like ended up at this bar and then we ended up having a really meaningful conversation. And then you were like, oh, we should really make a podcast. And now we're like in your hotel room making a meaningful dialogue happen. You know, so I'm not, you know, like we could all be more connected and we could also be more focused.
Another like cliche thing is like as an entertainer or performer, like you're always working.
Right.
Like no matter what you're doing, because there's always like people to network with or whatever.
Yeah.
So are you able to shut that down and just like...
Well, it's hard because people keep pulling you out of it, right? Like sometimes when you go somewhere... When I go to a party in New York, usually the first thing people say to me is, well, two things they say to me is like, when is the House of Yes opening? And are you performing tonight and when are you performing?
Yeah.
And so it's like, I've already rarely stepped out of my place to enjoy, like, I love dancing and like, I love, and when I'm dancing, I don't want anyone to talk to me. But at the same time, I'm this public person who runs this community, like underground community, like circus theater event space. So I can't just be like, oh, fuck you. Like, can't you see I'm on the dance floor? Yeah. So you're always kind of like concerned with the PR and you're concerned with the, like being nice all the time. And you're always like, no matter how far you want to remove yourself from working, like you're always getting pulled back into it one way or another. And at the same time, you're really I'm really passionate about what I do. And I love talking about it most of the time. And all I do is I'm like pitching this idea that I've been doing for like 6 or 7 years. And so I'm really good at talking about it, you know? And it's like, yeah, I guess it's hard to disconnect yourself from it. And it's hard to even know like what that means sometimes.
So that happens because you're in Brooklyn. You're like a personality in Brooklyn. So do you enjoy when you're like traveling? So
yeah,
like if
yeah,
you're somewhere else, no one knows or cares who you are, like in a new town.
And that,
like,
and that's
that?
When I love it. And that's when I have really amazing connections and conversations with people about just whatever.
It's more of a natural thing about you instead of what their perception.
And they're also not biased by like who I am, and they can just talk to me as a human being. Yeah.
So you wouldn't be able to be a very good celebrity.
I don't think I want to. I mean,
because then if you're a celebrity now, that's always going to happen.
But I think some celebrities kind of limit their public time versus their, like, private time. Like, some celebrities are, I don't know, like the actual, like, Hollywood, like, superstars, like George Clooney and, like, Angelina Jolie and, like, Brad Pitt. Like, everyone's obsessed with them, but I think that they're able to have, like, really private lives.
Yeah.
Where they, like, by contract, you know, for a shit ton of money that allows them to have these amazing lives, they do walk the red carpet and give interviews and talk about whatever they're supposed to talk about, but you're not, like, revolving your whole life around talking about yourself, which I think can, like, become really damaging.
Do you ever wish you were more popular or more of a celebrity?
I'm pretty happy where I am. I wish I was more flexible. Like, I wish I had more discipline to train harder. There's all sorts of things that I'm not satisfied with that I can go on and on about.
What?
Like, I wish that I had the discipline to just, like, optimally, like, use my time in the most perfect way and not waste any time ever. And I know that's, like...
That sounds terrible, though.
But it's, like, I know what I wish that I wanted to do. I would not be happy. I know. And it's, like... But part of me wishes that I would wake up every morning and then I would do, like, an hour and a half, like, stretching regimen. And then I would spend, like, 2.5 hours, like, answering my emails and promoting whatever it is that I'm promoting and, like, doing all my computer work without getting distracted and, like, looking at, like, crazy, like, science, like, ifuckinglovescience.com or whatever, or, like, yeah, listening to some, like, podcast, like, howstuffworks.com or whatever, and I could just, like, stay right on track. And then if I could do those things perfectly, then I would obviously have enough time to go and have some social interactions with people that I've been meaning to reach out to. But, like, it doesn't work that way. Like, no one does that. You know, you just end up, like, waking up whenever. And, like, if you don't have to be somewhere specifically, you never wake up on time to your alarm clock. And your apartment's never as clean as you wish it was. And you're not as, like, ahead of the game as you wish you were. Like, those are the things that I wish, is to, like, be more organized and, like, totally perfect. But I'm not.
Do you think that would solve?
No, and I know it won't solve anything.
So what if that would happen? What if your life was, like...
Then I'd find other things to be...
Efficiency.
I would either be, like, totally bored, or I would find... I would be like, oh, I've conquered everything. Like, time to do something else, which would not happen. Or I would find new things to, like, ostracize about myself. But I think that's what it's like. It's about never being satisfied, right? Because that's what, like, keeps you in motion.
Yeah. So that's been a thing that's been happening with people that I've been talking to. And it's cool that you hit that, never being satisfied. I've asked of the past few people, are you ever done? Is your art finished?
I don't think you're ever done, no. I mean, I think, like, maybe ask me again after, like, I've, like, popped out some babies and gotten married a few times and, you know, went through menopause and I'm, like, 90 years old and maybe, like, I might be done, but...
That's the other... Another thing, too, I feel like even, you know, I've only been performing for a little while. I mean, I'm not that old, and I've only been really, like, performing professionally for 6 years.
Oh, really?
And
you're so much more professional than I am, and I've been doing this for, like, 8 years.
No, I'm not professional, though.
But see, that's exactly what you're asking, is that, like, to me, you just exude, like, organization and professionalism. And, like, yeah, you, like, go out in town and, like, party and, like, do wacky things, but, like, you got your shit together in my eyes. And I'm like, oh, like, my promo reel isn't where it needs to be, and, like, et cetera, et cetera.
When I feel like, you know, in the past even few years, like when I first started, I had like this like crazy drive, like, oh, every moment I'm going to be out, I'm going to meet this person, like I'm going to do this show.
Yeah, yeah.
I always have like business cards or posters in my pocket.
Right.
Like after the show, I'm meeting every single person in that venue. And now, even like a few years later, like I still have that thing, like, oh, I want to make the most out of every situation that I'm in.
Well, you're still ambitious, but you're not however old you were, and you're like a little bit jaded, and you kind of
start to lose it. Yeah, like so every day.
I think lose it is like a not
necessarily. It fades.
Not even fades. I think that you, well, A, like, you kind of realize that you don't need to sell yourself to everyone. You need to sell yourself to the people that are going to buy your product. And those aren't random person at their bachelor party who's, like, really excited about your thing that you just did. I think that you just become, like, you kind of, like, channel your energy in more effective ways.
Well, what's kind of crazy about that is, like, I've gotten to where I am because I was like that.
And I think we all have to do that. And I think that the biggest piece of advice I give to up-and-coming performers is, like, they're like, how do I get to where you are now? And I'm like, well, first of all, I'm not anywhere near anywhere now. And second of all, like, take every single performance opportunity ever and just do it, because you're going to learn so much and, like, you just need exposure. And, but I think that's what it takes. Like, I think most working performers, like, on our level, they've put in that time where they were doing, like, every underground party and every fundraiser and every thing, every favor and every small gig, where as long as you weren't losing money, it was worth it.
What would happen if that thing never went away for us?
I think we'd be running in circles and just distracted from the things that matter.
So I feel like some people don't ever lose that. Like, sure, it gets better. It gets, you're chasing higher and higher things every year. Like, I feel like since I started performing, like, every year there's been, like, one thing that happened. Like, in the past couple years. Like, so, like, 2012, I went on a military tour and, like, toured, like, I was in the Indian Ocean with, like, a bunch of NFL cheerleaders. So I was like, this is insane.
Right.
Like, this is, I could be like, this is now my job doing this crazy thing. And then, like, 2013, burlesque show at Borgata was, like, kind of a highlight of the year. I was like, oh, this is crazy. This was, like, kind of, like, what I did this year, even though it was only, you know, not really. And then, you know, now, then I was like, you know, this year, 2014, I was like, oh, I didn't do anything awesome. And then I hit this, and I was like, oh, Matt Taj, you know, in Atlantic City now, two nights a week. It kind of keeps, like, every year something kind of cooler or better keeps happening.
Yeah.
But I'm not hustling nearly as much as I ever was. Like, in a way, I'm doing more.
Yeah, but, like, some of that stuff is, like, you don't need to hustle as much because
the work's already been done.
It's been done, and you've made those contacts. And, you know, it's like, I don't have any kind of regular contract with anyone, but, like, the work just keeps coming in because I've, like, already worked for all these people before. You know, it's like, if I have 200 clients and they book me for one event a week, I'm doing 200 gigs that year, and that's enough. But I mean, it works out because we're not, like, 21 and can just not sleep ever and survive on, like, egg and cheese breakfast, and that's it for the rest of the day. So I think that, like, it just worked out for us that we were young enough to, like, put in, you know, pay our dues.
So do you think the things will just start to become automated as time goes by?
I think you still have to, like, keep working hard, but you just have to work hard in different ways. Like, you can't just work hard by running around to, like, every random $100 opportunity. You work hard by putting together proposals, which, as I'm sure you know, are getting increasingly more complicated. We're now, like, some proposals require you to, like, hire a videographer to, like, edit a specific reel for them, and the budgets are now, like, in the, like, all right, let me produce $30,000 worth of entertainment for your, like, 5-year-old's birthday party.
Right.
And that's really hard. So it's just our work gets a little bit more specialized, but, like, I think our brains are working harder if our feet are working less.
Yeah, that's interesting that we might be having to, the work is being changed into a different, evolving into a, you know, we're not, like, I don't want to say we're not hustling as much, because I know we are, but it becomes more of a thoughtful. Before it was just like, go do as many things as possible.
Yeah, and as an adult, it should be more thoughtful. It's right. Like, we can't.
Yeah,
instead, and I mean, certain things, it's like, I'm too old for this shit. Like,
yeah.
Like, I remember one time I was at this party, I was being hired to go-go dance, and my costume included me taking a gallon of red house paint and dumping it over my head and then smearing it around. I was solid red, like house paint. And I rode my bike to the gig in, like, Bed-Stuy. Completely, like, naked.
Right.
Covered in red paint. And, like, that was okay.
Yeah.
And I don't regret it. It was fucking awesome, and it was, like, $30, like, well earned.
$30.
Yeah, and some drink tickets.
Yeah, of course.
But now I couldn't do that.
What are some crazy, like, things that you'll never forget? Things that, like, events
I'll never forget. Or I'll never do again. Ever.
Right. Both. Yeah.
Well,
so like take home things like that are just like, you're like, oh, you know, if when you're, you know, in 30 years from now and you're writing your book of
there's so many. I don't even know which.
When you're so successful that
I think I might
you
need
can
a,
write a
I think,
memoir.
I think I might need to arrange your little mini fridge before I dive into that short list.
We can do that. We can take a little break here.
No, we don't need to take a break.
Well, then I edit it.
I'm sorry in advance. You know, it's funny. Like, you know, when you end certain emails with like thanks in advance, it like helps you force
people
to do things.
I've never said that ever. Oh.
It's like, hey, could you put my thing on your mailing list? Thanks in advance. See you next week. What if
you're not asking them to
no,
do
you're
it?
Like,
you're telling
oh,
them
like,
you're going
like,
to do this.
Hey, so I'm doing this really cool thing, and it'd be really great if a lot of people came to it. Could you put it on your mailing list? Thanks in advance. See you later, Anya. But what if you like had an ending to certain emails being like sorry in advance?
Oh yeah, yeah.
So I'm not going to be able to make it to tech rehearsal at all. Because I'm doing something else. Sorry in advance.
like what would be like a normal, not like a tech rehearsal, you know? That's
like I'm really sick with the flu, so I can't babysit your child on your 5-year wedding anniversary. Sorry in advance. It's funny because it's so like, it's like I'm gonna fuck up next week. I'm really sorry about that.
Right, it needs to be more like, I have like a party to go to. I don't feel good tomorrow. Yeah. I'm going out with my friends tonight. I don't feel good tomorrow, so I'm gonna have to bail on those plans we had mm-hmm. for the next day. Sorry in advance.
There you have part one with Anya. There's plenty more that we chatted about, so stay tuned for part two coming out soon.
Thank you for listening to the Chris Ruggiero podcast.